For decades, smallholder coffee farmers across East Africa have operated within value chains they do not control, producing the coffee but not participating in how value is created beyond the farm. That is now beginning to change. This is a Market Signals episode where we explore the shifts shaping how markets evolve. When SMEs are equipped not just with production skills, but with branding clarity, traceability, digital visibility, and direct buyer engagement, they capture more value across the chain. This is about moving from dependency to agency. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Nicole Moto, a program implementation specialist and coffee advocate with over 20 years experience, and someone who I worked alongside on SME capacity building programs. Nicole, welcome to the MarTech Unraveled podcast.
Thank you so much, Fiona. It's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you so much for inviting me. I think it was almost a year ago we were in Kenya together, mm-hmm. working with agribusinesses on digital marketing.
Yes, absolutely. I was in 2024, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 2024, December. October, December, yeah.
Yeah, and through the work we've been doing with those companies and the cooperatives and the farmers, we've really seen real change happening, which has been so exciting working and sharing this journey with you. That digital marketing has opened up markets, opened up opportunities, and it's really delivering incredible results for the companies we've been working with over the past 5 years. Mm. So Fiona, I'm really excited about your podcast because this series is so, so important, especially in Kenya where 85% of your businesses are small, medium enterprises. So well done to the podcast. Really excited to be part of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Nicole. So it's been a pleasure working with you as well. And looking forward to, you know, talking more about, you know, this topic about, you know, driving agency for SMEs in the coffee industry and various other industries. Now, you recently won an award for your work. Congratulations.
Yeah,
tell us more.
I was so pleased to be named finalist at MICE. For me, it reflects all our work that we have been doing collectively, all the effort. So it's not at an individual level. But what is great is that MICE and all of these trade shows brings together buyers, roasters, exporters, value chain people. And it's a real opportunity for our producers who you said are so remote, often from markets, to go and be able to communicate directly and get their products to market. Mm. But often with digital, it's great because they can be known before they arrive and already have that confidence and knowledge what the buyers are looking for. Mm-hmm. So certainly we've been working very hard to make sure that our SMEs and the companies are stronger and market linked and have that understanding of building relationships and having a presence.
Mm. Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much. And I look forward to hearing more about your work. So let's jump right into the discussion. You grew up on a coffee farm in the 1980s when intermediaries largely controlled pricing and market access. From what you've seen through the business capacity building programs that you've led, what fundamentally changes for an SME when they move from being a price taker in the value chain to a brand owner with direct buyer access?
Yes, Fiona, let me just take you back to the feeling of being on a coffee farm mm-hmm. as a kid. And then certainly growing up on a coffee farm was amazing. It was a beautiful childhood. I grew up in the Eastern Highlands of Zimbabwe, mm-hmm. with beautiful views across the coffee bushes into Mozambique. Our area was actually called the Mountains of the Mist. So again, wow. you know, this idea of marketing and bringing together all the key information that the markets can utilize. But certainly I have fond memories of the harvest time when the trucks were getting stuck in the mud, mm. the pauper lights were going all night as we were harvesting. But what I really valued the most was the stories, mm-hmm. listening to the people, the culture, walking in the forest. It was a truly beautiful childhood. Mm-hmm. But what I did learn was that we had been cut off from the markets for many, many years. And it was only in the 1990s that we were breaking back into the market. Mm-hmm. Before, we were just selling to a marketing board. Mm-hmm. And then we started having to put our coffee out there. Mm-hmm. I really, really was a bit confused at one point with my father, because he started building labels and doing this sort of fancy sort of thing. And I thought he was just having fun. But in fact, my father was starting to sell that coffee locally, mm-hmm. and directly and personally.
Okay.
And what he actually did next was even more deeply confusing for me, is that he used to go straight into the kitchen, mm-hmm. of the hotels he was selling the coffee to, and go and work with the staff, okay. so that they could actually make the coffee properly, because he knew that the customers needed the quality. Mm. And that means making the coffee properly.
Yeah. Wow.
So I'm telling you the story because we cannot isolate our product from the market. We need to ensure that the quality is there, as well as the backup story to go to market to be visible. Mm.
Interesting. Okay. I love that. I love you painting that picture of your experience, you know, growing up on a farm and seeing, you know, how the, you know, value chain was controlled, and your dad, you know, taking the initiative to start to directly access the buyer. You know, in Kenya, evidence shows that when SMEs clarified their brand story and digital presence, exports rose by up to 45% and sales by up to 70%. So, you know, to your point, you know, why is storytelling not just marketing, but actually a mechanism for shifting economic power back to the producer?
For sure. Storytelling really reduces the risk for buyers. They really understand the companies behind. A lot of the buyers, of course, naturally are hesitant in the markets. So buyers that are comparing something that is clear to something that is maybe a bit more vague and information is incomplete, they would rather go, of course, for that buyer that presents that background. But the valuable part of the whole story making is that it needs to have the creativity, but also to ensure that it has the facts behind it, mm. for it to stand. And that is something that is vital. There's no greenwashing. It's your story, and be proud of it. We don't have to be all the same. We don't have to have all the certifications. We don't have to have the best of everything, but be true to the story. And that is something we have learned, and a lot of the companies have really embraced that. And when they read that first story, there's almost a magic. Somebody has written their whole story, and it's so exciting. It's like a moment that, like a present has been opened up.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, just thinking through, you know, that storytelling element and the facts, it really is the uniqueness of the producer that's, you know, brought to light when the storytelling is being told, you know, one coffee producer in one region versus another region, all of a sudden it's not just coffee, it's coffee that is has character, that has the people story behind it and so on, right?
Absolutely. That origin is so critical and so unique. And we have, through our journey together, Fiona, we've had incredible stories that we've worked with that sometimes you just can't believe how, you know, the value in each one. Some stories open up a book in front of you. So a lot of the SMEs are sitting on incredible value.
Absolutely. And another thing, you know, that we've also found in the work that we're doing that you could speak to is sometimes the producers we worked with are even surprised themselves when we extract the stories from them. You know, they're like, oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. I actually have a story to tell. Like, oh, my goodness, my coffee is actually unique. You know, even the producers themselves are amazed at the uniqueness of their story as well.
Yes. And the most important thing in the story making is certainly the consistency of the story. It really helps people to put their numbers down, dates down, and acknowledge that whole journey where they've come from. It is so important that we can't underestimate it. At MICE, at the trade show that I've been to, they kept on saying, we need the origin story. It helps buyers to see the not only the story, but to see the links and the steps that the producers are putting in. And the customers are valuing this more and more today in the markets.
Absolutely. Now, the evidence also shows that, you know, when SMEs increase their sales and exports, they reinvest in the youth, in employment, women inclusion, education, and community health. From your perspective, you know, how direct is the link between greater value chain control, higher retained margins, and local reinvestment?
Certainly, we just did a review of all our work, and it was incredible because what we have seen is that most companies have grown around 70%.
Wow.
Some of their sales have even gone up to 60%. Mm-hmm. And behind this, as they've been understanding the market, their cup, their quality of their coffee has also increased. Mm-hmm. So with this means that they've been able to tap into what we call the specialty coffee market and get that higher price. And a lot of the SMEs that we worked with, they originally were quite unknown in the market. And now they are well recognized in the market. They are super confident. But we have seen from this increase in sales and growth and understanding of their whole, their impact on the land. We've seen incredible funds going back into the farms, not only in wetland restoration, but some into their whole sort of milling, processing, making sure that they are increasing water efficiency, reducing electricity, getting innovative equipment, making sure that quality is always there. But they also have understood their local context. And local context is super important. So we have people in Kenya that have been working with period coffee. So making sure that girls can continue going to school. They also have been working with youth in terms of becoming trained baristas, so to increase that domestic consumption locally, to keep that money circulating within Kenya. Mm-hmm. The results have been so, there has been such a range of different results that it's been absolutely a joy and an honor.
Absolutely. I think, you mentioned, I think the more the SMEs have control and able to extract more value, they're able to keep more value and therefore even think broadly of, you know, what else can we be doing, you know, to impact the environment, impact the people, to even improve the quality of our coffee. That's what's, you know, is coming through, you know, as some of the results you're highlighting.
For sure. And what has been really amazing, I think it came out in our workshop when we were together in Kenya, mm-hmm. was a lot of the companies are starting to work with other companies mm-hmm. because they're seeing that they can actually use what we have been developing, the digital marketing and support, to actually combine their coffee in their regions or combine different regions and different lots. Mm-hmm. So they are having an imagination and they are embracing more and more of the ability to go to market. They're no longer waiting.
Yeah.
That's gone. Mm. They are saying we are in the chair and we're going to break through. And I guess what I'm really keen to also say to the market is we are so used to saying the poor farmers. Mm. But actually, what we have seen is dynamic, excited, brave farmers. And a lot of them are women in this space. And I wish we could, as consumers, really embrace that and say, well done.
Yeah.
Let's get behind it.
Absolutely. I think discussions like this are definitely crucial to, you know, bring to light the results and what's going on as well. So definitely more of these conversations. Now, not only are the benefits monetary, as we've, you know, talked about, but the SMEs also gained business clarity, confidence, the ability to differentiate, trust, and buyer advocacy. From your experience mentoring these founders, what mindset shift occurs when an SME stops waiting for buyers to find them and instead proactively position themselves in the premium markets?
I think when we first start working with the SMEs, there's almost a reluctance, you know? Mm-hmm. How is this going to happen, you know? And I think there's also a feeling that they have to feel like they keep on running in a circle. Mm-hmm. And we have to stop that and say, that's no longer going to happen if you follow these steps. There's a lot of steps to do. It's not an easy turnaround to get to the point where a lot of the companies are super confident. They have their data. They have their narratives. Mm-hmm. They are digitally excellent. but once they have got it, there is a shift, mm-hmm. a sudden realization that comes in, and also a belief that they are worthy. They stand beside their product. They know the price of the product. And they are full of excitement for going into the market. It's no longer that waiting game. We have some of the companies that actually said that they used to wish the phone rang, and now they say they wish the phone would stop ringing. So they have really turned it around.
Yeah. That's a good problem to have.
The good problem is.
Amazing. I think also to add to that, one of the other things we saw is the confidence to pitch at trade shows. Talk us through, like, what were some of the results you saw when you worked with SMEs and equipped them with their narrative, with their pricing, with pitching skills, and how that went when they went to international trade shows?
Yes. Pitching is so important. It's quite unnerving to go to a trade show. You're there with thousands of others and many of them are also producing coffee. So it's not an easy thing to do. It sounds fun to go, but to make it actually commercial and to get those sales, to get that engagement, it does take a little bit of pre-practicing. And what we were doing in the work we were together was actually testing the SMEs in situ and saying, let's have a go at it. And getting them down to that first interaction, that first minute, being able to get that longer content and draw it down. And also, importantly, how to stop a customer in the track, not just saying, listen to me, but how, what are you looking for in the supply chain? So turning it on to the buyers. So then you're starting to get a bit of rapport, but also having respect together as a group, you know, working together as a country, like Kenya as together, because people may buy from a few of the SMEs. Standing as a strong company, a country, gives also the confidence at the trade shows.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, many SMEs struggled with inconsistent messaging and low visibility before participating in the capacity building support. After structured branding and digital support, internal alignment improved, and international buyers responded. So, you know, what happens psychologically and commercially when a producer moves from being invisible in the supply chain to being recognized and trusted in markets like, you know, Switzerland, South Korea, the Middle East, Australia, and so on?
Well, certainly to become commercial, you have to be trusted. So there are a few things that have to happen. We're presuming at this point that people have the quality, that they have gone and got their coffee tested, that it is a certain grade. It doesn't matter actually if you and commodity grade, but it's just saying we produce commodity coffee or we produce specialty coffee and our score is X. So you have to know, understanding where you are in that sort of commercial arena is an incredible first step. Because you don't want your coffee sample to go and then someone to test it and it says no. Already that distrust goes. We say in coffee, you taste it. If you taste anything wrong in the coffee, there's something going wrong in your supply chain. So then the whole story collapses.
Yeah.
So it's incredibly important to make sure the quality is there that you are putting forward, whatever that quality is, and giving the buyer that trust, that leverage, that position in the market. So clarity, consistency, reliability are words that we always hear, but it is so important. And then more and more today, the buyers are saying, also show us, you know, give us some proof that that coffee comes from those people, that coffee is actually doing what you're saying it's doing. So putting those systems up is really, really important. And I guess through our branding and marketing and our digital readiness and business readiness, the companies have had to really look through their whole supply chain. And get all those little points, you know, together. Firmed up, and I think that's a big psychological shift mindset. You know, we don't just jump into the market, but we jump in confidently, structured, focused, and we're all and they're organized, business ready.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, and intentionally. You know, knowing what the buyer wants, you know, and then having the right information in place to. You know, prove and to build that trust, as you mentioned. I think trust is a big, big word, you know, in this whole conversation, building trust, especially in the export market. You know, your buyers are thousands of miles away. So, you know, you have to be able to build that trust.
Yeah. And trust is everything. You can, you know, it takes a long time to build trust and very quick to break it.
Yeah.
You don't mess with it.
Yes.
It's your gem.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, many global buyers, you know, as you mentioned, they now require traceability. You know, they want to know where exactly that coffee is grown, who grows it, the processing methods and so on. You know, there's EUDR alignment and certification readiness. Do you see environmental compliance as a burden imposed on SMEs or a strategic opportunity to command premium pricing and bypass intermediaries? And, you know, how should donors and ecosystem actors frame sustainability support to strengthen the bargaining power rather than increase dependency?
You know, it's a hard question because a lot of that certification is important because it gets the processing right, it gets the systems right, and we get the output that we're looking for or outcomes, the environmental care, that reassurance to our customers that whatever the certification they are backing, Fairtrade, Forest Alliance, Birds, that they feel that they are, have an input into the market. And some markets are very strong about this. And some markets actually have a particular sort of trade that they look at, particularly, for example, like, say, England. They, you know, you have a real fair trade sense in the UK. In terms of burden, it's, I think when I look at it, this word organic can be so misused. Being organic doesn't mean that you do nothing agriculture. It actually is a very proactive approach, and it's quite a hard approach. So do nothing agriculture can also strip away the nutrients of the soil, start mining the acid base. So it is important that if customers are looking for organic, that they are insisting and knowing that it is genuinely organic. So yes, it does give customers that reassurance in the market. However, on the flip side, I think in Australia, we're not so fixated on certifications. We are more fixated on good agricultural practice, knowing that if there's quality in the bean, there's usually good practice behind the bean. And they have a much stronger direct trade. So, you know, visibly going there and checking and building that sort of more the trust. Acknowledging that certification is an extra cost on farmers and maybe redirecting that extra cost back into the system, the local system, could be beneficial. So, yes, maybe in the beginning, certification was super important when we were, you know, everyone was starting out, gave us a baseline. But, yeah, it's very dependent on the consumer, very dependent even on the country's context. It's hard to have a hard line on it.
Okay. Makes sense. It's a word, catch 22. It's a, it's beneficial on one side, but also burdensome on the other side. So I guess it's on a case by case basis kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think what I have also learned with the whole certification is that there's a lot of pressure on the companies to be providing more and more information. Each certification is quite different. I know in Kenya, a lot of people have even 2 to 3 different certifications. That's a lot of work. And I feel amongst the certifiers that it would be good if we had a more systematic approach to information gaining to reduce that sort of burden, or maybe that the somewhere in the supply chain there's a cost that is as applied, so the SME can gain you know, some compensation for that work on the, you know, all of that information gaining.
Yeah.
It's an incredible load on the SMEs.
No, that's a good point. Make it make sense for the SME, you know. What is the benefit down the line? Is there a subsidy that can be applied, you know, because of the investment? That makes a lot of sense. Now, what would true value chain reform look like in 5 years? If we were serious about reforming agricultural value chains in East Africa, what would success look like, and what must ecosystem actors stop doing or start doing differently to accelerate that shift, in your view?
It's a big question.
It is.
But I'm used to them, Fiona.
Absolutely, you've been working. You've been working with a lot of SMEs across East Africa and Asia. So, yeah, you've encountered this a lot.
But it's very exciting. We are seeing a lot of reform. The SMEs are becoming more and more visible. They are active. They're more present. Their direct trade. I slightly shifted in some way, because before COVID, a lot of the companies were waiting for people to come to them, to their country. And, you know, it was your luck that you had made some sort of contact. But now the way we work with the SMEs is that they are now in charge of their story. They are in charge of their narrative, and they are going to market with it. And so they are breaking through, and that's where the digital component has been so liberating for everybody, because they're not only getting into the market, but they're starting to own new brands, do things differently, doing processing differently. So they are expanding as they are embracing.
I wonder, would you, this thought just crossed my mind. I wonder if COVID accelerated this. Because I remember, you know, one of the projects we worked on was in 2020, when the borders were closed and buyers were not able to travel to growing regions. So I wonder if that was also an accelerant as well for owners and growers to start to figure out, how do we reach the buyers? Because, you know, we never know when the buyers will not be able to come to us.
Yes. It was a very important and wonderful result, really, of it. Before, I used to write for the Perfect Daily Grind quite a few articles, and I found it really frustrating, because in all of the different countries when I was researching, the same story would pop up. It was almost like a copy-paste everywhere, and there were so many gaps in East Africa. Like, I didn't know exactly where this was, what was going on. And I think in COVID, it was really quite stressful for the SMEs, because they did feel cut off. It was exactly at this point where we changed our approach. Instead of writing the narratives for companies, that they started taking charge of their own story, their own pen. And because it was so important that with today's marketing and branding, is no longer a once-off. You don't just, you know, write a nice brochure and a website and it's finished. It's an everyday thing. So when we worked with the SMEs, they had to really incorporate a new mindset in their work, that it was not just social media, which they sort of posted something ad hoc. They were competing with the likes of Nespresso on Instagram. As you scroll down, their images had to be as good. And so we even did photo training over line. And, you know, we had to look at the whole spread for these companies to feel they could actually take their story to market. And it really was a great shift.
Mm. Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, bearing that in mind, you know, as we come to nearer the close of our conversation, you know, given your experience running several capacity building programs for SMEs in Africa and Asia, as I mentioned, you know, what are the right components for an effective program? You know, given all we've talked about, what are the components, you know, that make up an effective capacity building program?
Really? It is to give the pen back. It's a grueling process. Mm-hmm. But giving the SMEs the courage, the hope to endure, and also the joy of their pen, the joy of their story again. And it's incredible when people start to feel liberated. It's in their writing. Because writing is something that a lot of us are scared of. Mm-hmm. It's something that we are taught to be frightened of. You know, we may make a grammar mistake or we may do something that doesn't quite make sense. But that doesn't matter because it's actually the content behind it. And our team work with editors that can pull those stories beautifully together. But behind it, it was penned by the SMEs. So the components for me in saying that is capability and ownership and making sure that they have their product with clarity, definition, that they go onto their digital tools and digital systems, develop those communication skills and that confidence behind it, but make it a way of life. It's not something that you do on Monday, 1 week, and then remember 1 month later. Mm-hmm. You have to understand what you're doing, be consistent, be strong, be engaging. Don't be passive. Don't just do a post. Yeah. But engage and realize it's a real important place to be, and it's a place of learning too. Mm-hmm. So follow through with your processing. Have that continuation, be disciplined and consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I almost feel like this conversation also, you know, really speaks to the narrative or, you know, the transition we're going through as a continent as well about telling our story. You know, for a long time, our story has been told by other people.
Sure.
And I think there's power in ourselves telling our own story because we know the reality with which we, you know, we are growing the coffee, you know, the environment that we're playing in, the people who are involved, the climate and so on. And no one else can tell that story apart from us and with the color and the vibe and the culture. So I think, you know, what you're saying really speaks to that broader narrative of we as Africans, as owners and producers, need to get on the mic or get on the pen and tell the story.
For sure. Context specific is wonderful. So, so wonderful. SMEs are certainly in Kenya and East Africa and Southern Africa are not lacking skills or not lazy. It's just the lack of being visible. They are doing the hard work.
Yeah.
And all it is just now saying, you can do it. And digital can help bridge, have that clarity, have that connection, and have those opportunities, have the phone ringing endlessly, and allow the market to see you. And to understand and engage. But so certainly shifting this mindset, I guess, from waiting and hoping to leading, acting and trading. It's a wonderful opportunity.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much, Nicole. And, you know, if there's one takeaway from this conversation, it is that digital is not separate from trade. It is part of how trade is now happening. The businesses that are winning ground are not necessarily producing more. They are producing clearly, they're documenting properly, and they're communicating consistently and engaging directly. That changes who holds the information. It changes who is visible. And over time, it changes who captures the value in the chain. Nicole, thank you so much for your time and for your insights. This has been so fun. I'm so glad we got this opportunity to, you know, talk about the work we've been doing and the impact that it's been having. So I really appreciate having you on.
Thank you so much, Piano, and so happy that you're doing this podcast, because it is wonderful to see all that hard work that people in Kenya and around are doing, and it gets acknowledged in the market and brings the right benefits. So thank you so much, Piano.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye.